I am super excited about what we're going to talk about this morning's session and this evening's session. I consider myself to be a practical theologian. So I have my master's from the seminary, but my thought is that if what we talk about on Sunday doesn't matter on a Tuesday, then why are we even talking about it, right? And we can sit here and have theories and have philosophies all that we want, but if it doesn't get on the front lines of us being with kids, then what does it really matter? And so we're going to get real practical today, and I'm really excited about that. As we do that, I want to show you and let you know that this sits on my desk in my office every day. This is my eighth grade yearbook from Owatonna Junior High School. And not only do I have all the pictures that you can imagine in this photo, in this yearbook, but I also have still all of the signatures of my friends and the ones, you know, that were nominal friends that I look at least once a month. At least once a month when I'm in my office, I take this and I look through it and I see all of the pictures. Okay? So, oh my goodness, there is Dustin Stendel, who was considered to be, all the girls wanted to date Dustin Stendel in the eighth grade. There's my friend Bobby Bulver, that was Bobby and Becky Bulver. They were the first twins that I knew. There's Eric Kylo. He was wicked smart, and he was the one who got me through earth science. I was so thankful for him. And probably my favorite picture that I need to show you is here. There's my cheerleading photo when I was in the eighth grade. And if you look carefully, I'm in the middle. I was a base, not a flyer, if that needs clarification. And look at, there are like four girls that are standing on me. And I couldn't have been happier. And then I just love that right across here was the eighth grade swim team in their Speedos in January in Minnesota. It's like the most awkward photo that you could ever have, right? So with someone at your table, please try to come up with two reasons. Why in the world would I keep this on my desk, and why would I look at it once a month? Just with one person next to you, try to figure that out. Go. Give some good reason for that. Okay, wrap up that sharing. Okay, Juliana, give me one thing you guys talked about. Why do I do that? Kids will always be kids, and adults aren't kids anymore. We sometimes act like kids. How many of you have met a parent who's 50 but acting like a 14-year-old, right? Because they haven't dealt with the things that they've needed to deal with. But kids will be kids, and I have to remember what it was like to be a kid, right? Myrn, what's one reason why I do it? Yeah? Oh, no, I know, but I'm choosing you instead. What's one thing you talked about? I know you followed my guidelines. What did you guys talk about? Yeah, yeah. Wow. So seeing God's faithfulness, because maybe even seeing the insecurity that I had or the wonder that I had of why, you know, will I ever have friends or what, will God ever use this crazy person? And God has been faithful. I love that. Jason, she volunteered you. Wow. Okay. Okay. I love it. Those are all right. And what I would add to that is it helps me be a better youth leader. When I remember what it was like. Because you know what happens as we get to be adults? We age and we forget. We forget the all-consuming nature. Like, buttonfly jeans came out when I was in ninth grade. Ha! Now, I never had a pair of Jabot or Guess because we weren't that rich, but I had a fake pair. And I remember one Friday morning, I was like, Mom, did you wash my buttonflies? And she's like, no, I didn't have a chance to. My mother, right? Mother of six children, my dad gone on the road all the time. And I was like, but Mom, and she's like, you have other pants you can wear. And I was like, but not my buttonfly. Because it was Friday, friends. It was Friday during football season. And I knew if I wore those buttonflies on that Friday to school, I got a double hit because I got to wear them to the game that night. And it was very important. But she didn't understand. She didn't understand the all-consuming nature, right? Have you ever heard parents say things like, well, just get new friends, they say to their eighth grader. Just get new friends. Like, do you understand if I leave that friend that I sit at the lunch table with, the ripple effect is I will lose all of the rest of those friends and I'm eating by myself in a bathroom stall for lunch next week. By the way, do you know kids still do it? I've had conversations with kids in the last year who sit in that stall with it locked, and they eat lunch by themselves. We forget, friends. And so every chance I have, I look back and I think back and I recount times when I was a teenager, because then when I'm sitting with a kid and she starts talking about the boy that she likes now likes her best friend, and they're going out, even though he said he needed to date Jesus for a while, I can feel that pain with her instantly. And I'm not an empathetic, merciful person. Do you know I took the spiritual gift survey? I scored a 0 on the mercy scale. 0. Not even 1. But when I do this, I can empathize with her. I don't turn it around and be like, oh, well, you know, when I was in 9th grade, Kyle Verchey liked Barb instead of me. I don't turn it around. But I can minister to her in a different way because I remember. So every time that I have adults in the room who influence children, who live in houses with children, I make them look back. And that's what we're going to do with each other today. So this is very important to me. I wish that we could have the whole table share, because that's just, I know there's a fullness there, but we just don't have space and time to do that. So I'm going to ask that you share with just one person next to you, but you're each going to share first. What 3 words were used to describe you when you were in middle school? Think of your teachers, your coaches, your youth leaders, your Sunday school teachers. What 3 words would they have used to describe you? And then, of course, a great follow-up question is, Randy, do those 3 words still describe you? I was squirrely. I was, you know, those are always fun to say. Do they still describe you? Okay? So you're talking with one person. If you don't know them, introduce yourself and then answer this question. Go ahead. Everyone's talking to somebody. What's that? How adults described you. 3 words adults would have used to describe you. Yep. All right, wrap up that sharing. 2nd question. What 2 topics did you and your parents fight about most when you were teenagers? This one's a fascinating question, because especially those of you who are parents of teenagers, they look at Nana and Papa and they can't imagine that you ever fought with them, that Nana would ever raise her voice, right? But it's so important for them to understand, as that's another follow-up conversation about how you can help them understand that. But what 2 topics? I will tell you, for whatever reason, my junior year of high school, I got into wearing my dad's boxer shorts as my shorts. His underwear. I would wear his underwear as my shorts. I would wear underwear underneath the shorts. Hello, come on. But I would wear my dad's boxer shorts. They were very comfortable, very airy. My mother was devastated. Like, she just couldn't believe that I would go out, but she just didn't know what to do with me. And so she just tried to roll with it. And you guys, she started sewing up the flap in my dad's boxers so that it wouldn't gape open when I was wearing them, which was awesome for me. But then in the laundry, they got mixed up and they got put back in my dad's drawer. And my dad would have the boxers on with the sewn up flap, and it caused some tension. But that was one of the things my mom and I fought about. So if that's yours, you can't steal that. I've already got that one, okay? But what 2 topics did you fight about most? Talk with your friend about that. Go. Our minds are amazing machines that can log information and keep it stored. And I'm amazed at how many of us as adults in this room have a negative statement that we heard as a teenager that we still vividly remember. I have never been a thin girl. I've always been thicker and stronger. And when I was in the 7th grade, I played fast pitch softball, right? And there was a game where I hit 4 home runs, right? Because then I didn't have to run fast. Remember, I told you. Yeah, right. And it was one of those things where they announced it on the announcements the next day, right? And you were kind of like, you wanted people to hear, but you're like, I've got to be humble, right? So they said it, and then I got on the bus at the end of the day to go home, and I remember hoping that like some people had heard it and maybe would say something about it. And I got up, and I started walking down the aisle, and Nate Anderson, a hockey player, was in the back row, and he stood up. And let me just note that Nate was not a thin boy himself. But Nate said, "Hey, Heinz," that's my last name, "I hear you hit 4 home runs." And I was like, I'm standing right in front of the whole bus. I'm like, "Yeah. Would you put all your weight into it?" And the whole bus just went silent. And I remember, I was so vulnerable, friends, so exposed. Like, what in the world do? And I just found the closest seat that I could find, and I sat down just devastated. And I can put myself there in a heartbeat, right? And for many of us, the negative statement came from an adult, and that's often even more wounding. But I think it's important, and I know some of you are like, great, Heather, I've paid good money in counseling to try to not talk about these things, and now you're just making me bring them up. But there is a point, right, friends? Because our words matter. Words have weight. And I think of like kids who come in on a Sunday morning or during your midweek program. I think about the things they fight about with their parents, and I think about negative things they might have heard that week. That's all coming in with them. And for you to have a heart for that and an understanding that they might be vulnerable and they might be tender and that everything that you do and say is really even more important is really important for us to remember. So go ahead and share with somebody next to you. Now that you have bonded, now we're taking a deep dive. Negative statement you heard that you can still vividly remember. Okay, go ahead. So if you're in the room and you are the point person for your ministry, whether you are paid, part-time paid member or not paid, this is something I want to encourage you to do anytime you have adults in the room. My people will tell you, my volunteer staff will tell you that we do this every time we get together for training. And oftentimes on a Wednesday night, I'll even do a question where they have to turn and talk with somebody next to them just to get in the right mindset. And especially when parents are in the room. Anytime, next time you do a parent meeting or you go into a parent Sunday school class, I take the time to do this. Friends, this is not because I don't have enough content for this session, okay? I have more than enough that I'm going to be able to fit in. But it's that important to create a posture where we can be empathetic and kind and gracious to the kids that we love, right? So let me pray for us as we dig into this. Lord, thank you for all that was shared at these tables. I love, Lord, that you were not surprised at all by any of the answers because you are intimately aware. You have walked with us every step. You have hemmed us in before and behind. You know us, you love us, you see us. And so we're just so grateful. And Lord, would you just give us a discipline to take time to look back and think back to the time when we were teenagers so that we can have a compassion like you would have for these beautiful teenagers that you've put in our influence. So God, thank you for the way that you do redeem and restore. But thank you that you have given us emotion. You've created us in your image and you have infused in us emotion so that we can, I believe, comfort and love and care for others even more. In Jesus' name, amen. There are lots of words that I think are interchangeable in youth ministry. So like junior high and middle school, right? Even like youth ministry and student ministries. The youth room and the room right next to the boiler. Coke and Pepsi. I think actually that's a little crazy. So no, Coke is the God's drink. You understand that, right? Am I far enough? Okay. There are lots of words that could be interchanged, but two words that cannot be interchangeable, in my opinion, my conviction, is chaperone and shepherd. Chaperone and shepherd. And I want you to listen as you continue to move through life and through ministry, how often the word chaperone is used. Basically, any venue where you go, if you're going to like, when I go to Wild Mountain, which is a water park, you know, in Minnesota where I take my kids and this, they always talk about chaperones. How many chaperones will you be bringing? We have to have a chaperone ratio to a student. It's a word that's very common, but I do not believe it is the same as a shepherd. Interestingly, how we talked about that last night. My husband Chad and I decided we wanted to do a hot date night. So we said yes to chaperoning the homecoming dance at the high school. I dressed up in literally a dress and heels, which is not normal for this girl. Chad had on a suit and a tie. And the instructions per the email were that we were supposed to report, you know, a certain time earlier with all the other parents and teachers and coaches to get our instructions. I was so excited, so I told all the kids and I posted on Instagram, you know, that we were going to be having a date night and look for us. And we went over into this little circle. And basically what was communicated to us by Sherry, the coordinator, was that we were there that night to be a positive presence and to make sure, basically, that nobody died. She didn't actually say that, but, you know, that nobody died. It was made very clear that if something were to happen that we were concerned about, we were not to address it. We were not to approach it. If we thought it was significant, we were to find her, and then she would deal with it appropriately. That instruction, friends, goes against every fiber of my being. Some of it is just how God made me, right? You know, I talked about last night on the Enneagram, I'm an 8, so I'm very direct and I'm decisive and I don't mind hard conversations. I'm extroverted, but I believe that kids should be come alongside of and that we should see them and know them. And I was just like, are you kidding me? And so we complied, right? Because we were there to do what they asked us to do that night. And so we truly stood on the side of the gym while all of the kids were in there, you know, bumping and grinding. This was during when grinding was a big thing. And our kids were coming over and saying hi to us. And I remember some of them being like embarrassed because they knew what we were seeing. And they were like, I'm not grinding. I promise I'm not grinding. I'm like, okay. But there's nothing we could do. And I think my frustration that night was partly because of who God made me to be. But I would say the majority of it was because I thought, you are setting the bar so low. In two ways. You're setting the bar really low for kids, and you're setting the bar really low for adults to be able to positively influence and interact with kids. And it just resolved me even more within our ministry that we are not going to be chaperones. We are going to be shepherds. And so I want to break down what that difference could look like. What does a chaperone look like? A chaperone is functional, right? It fills a role. So you've got a van driver, you've got a camp nurse, you've got a greeter, a keeper of the bodily fluid kit. I'm just curious, how many of you have ever had to use a bodily fluid kit in ministry? Okay. They come usually on buses. But friends, literally, I mean, I've had, mostly mine has been vomit, thankfully, not like diarrhea or urine, but vomit. And it's this kit that makes it go away. It's wonderful. But I hope you don't have to use it. But I've used it at least 7 times. Okay. So a chaperone is functional like that. A chaperone meets the requirements of the adult to student ratio. You know, I think about how sometimes when we have this chaperone mentality, we just kind of scrape the bottom of the barrel, right? Like, we're going on a retreat and we need a male. So it's like, did you clear your background check and there's not a felony on it? Okay, you're with us. And I'm like, oh, there could be so much more. A chaperone offers supervision. This brings me back to my junior year of high school when I took aerobics as my gym class, and Mr. Dreheim was our aerobics instructor. We would go into the old gym, no lie. He would set up the VCR unit. He would put in a Jane Fonda video, and Mr. Dreheim would sit in the corner of the gym on a folding chair with his clipboard, and I don't know what he was doing, but he certainly was not involved in the aerobics with us, but he was simply supervising. He was making sure we didn't do anything bad, that we were all doing the movements. But wow, when I think back now, there was no connection. There was no encouragement. He simply was there to supervise. I love this one. Chaperones offer containment, right? Keep them in the room. Don't let them in the sanctuary. Don't let them out of the van. Don't let them out of the cabin. It's like we're bodyguards. It's like we stand at the doors to make sure that they are contained. Chaperones offer damage control. In the youth room, right? You don't want them to pull the fire alarm. You don't want them to ruin something so that you get in trouble. That's what chaperones do. So at your tables, I want you to just talk about, now you can do a whole table time. Why is that setting the bar too low? Both for the adult and for the student. Why is that setting the bar low? Just talk about that a little bit. Go ahead. So friends, I've been doing this almost as long as Taylor Swift has been alive, okay? So I acknowledge that containment and damage control and adult-student ratios are needed. I get that. But if that's all we're willing to give, if that's the bar we're shooting for, Number one, you're not going to be able to keep volunteers. And number two, the kids deserve so much more. And that's why we want to shift our focus, not only personally, but as we lead a team and as we interact with kids, to instead being a shepherd. A shepherd is in with the sheep. That night, as chaperones, we were literally asked to be on the outskirts. We could not move in to be in with them. We are as shepherds, we are in with the sheep. I hope that on a Wednesday night, I'll just use that because that's what we do for midweek, that you are in with the kids, that you are sitting on that couch next to them, that you are on the floor sitting next to them, you're in that chair sitting next to them. If I had my volunteer staff here, they would tell you that I say all the time, as soon as those doors open, we don't talk to each other anymore. We're all about the kids. And when it comes time for the teaching, you are sitting amongst the kids so that you can touch at least 5 to 6 of them around you, so that you can have conversation with them, so that you can influence them. I go to other youth groups to maybe speak or offer some consulting or something, and I am amazed at the leaders who are standing in the back of the room or sitting all in the row, or that they're at the end of the rows, or they're outside even in the hallway. And it just makes me so sad because there's so much more. Okay, and on the van ride, on the bus ride, are you with the kids? Are you sitting amongst them creating games and experiences? Or are you in the front row on your nook reading something? No, as sheep, as shepherds, we are in with the sheep. As shepherds, we know their names. Chaperones don't know names. Chaperones are like, hey, you in the blue shirt. Friends, God has given me a gift for names. I will acknowledge it. But I also have a high, high value for name. When you can call me by name, I came down the stairs. Actually, no, I didn't take the stairs. I took the elevator. I came out of the elevator this morning and Dawn was sitting there and Dawn said, hi, Heather. I didn't officially meet Dawn. Apparently, I hugged her last night, but I didn't get her name, which is that's the wrong order. Okay, but she called me by name and I'm 51 years old and I was like, ah, she called me by name. She remembered my name. Because when someone remembers your name and it takes up space in their head and they made an effort, you were memorable. It matters. And so I don't care if you have a hard time remembering your spouse's name. Like, that's how bad you are. This is so important. And you've got to figure out how to remember kids' names. We cheat a little bit in our ministry. We have name tags. Okay, and that's a cheat for some of my leaders. But for me, I use names in conversation that helps to solidify it. But like on a Wednesday night when I'm driving home, I think back on my night and I think about kids that I talked to, especially new kids that I met, and I'll repeat their name in my head and I'll think, oh, that's right, Carter knew Caden, and they play hockey together. Like I try to associate things with them because guess what? That next week, if Carter comes walking in and I'm able to say, Carter, you came back. It's so good to see you. Think about where Carter has been in the last week, in and out of classrooms where there are 32 kids, right? And a teacher who only has him for 9 weeks and probably doesn't know his name. And all of a sudden, he's known and he's seen. It matters. It also matters with discipline. I stole this from somebody. I can't remember who it is, but you got to write it down if you're a note taker. Reprimand without relationship equals rebellion. Reprimand without relationship equals rebellion. If you try to discipline a kid and you can't even call her by name, it's not going to go well, and that discipline is going to mean nothing. A relationship starts with knowing a name. Shepherds know the names of their sheep. Shepherds are about protection versus supervision. So they are aware of and looking out for dangers. I'm going to partner this with the next one, that shepherds are proactive. They have proactive care. Do you know that literally shepherds, I talked about it last night, would bring their sheep up into the mountain and they would look for, proactively look for green pastures where they could feed. But do you know that they would also rub oil on the heads of their sheep because there were certain insects that would try to burrow into the forehead of sheep and it would make them go crazy and they would often like run off of cliffs or like bang their heads against trees to try to help because it hurt so bad. So they would put oil on the head of their sheep proactively so that those insects couldn't burrow in. That's what we do. We look out for things that are tough for our kids. So when you are about to start youth group and you see Max and he's sitting next to Kyle and you go, that's not a good combination. You are being a shepherd. You are noticing that that is a danger for them and you call them by name and you're like, Kyle, Max, buddy, I'm sitting right in between you today. Woo! And you put your butt right in between them because proactively you know they're not going to make it through and the teacher's going to go crazy if they're not separated. Okay? At your table, I want you to pick out a kid in ministry and talk about how you need to be proactive and how you need to be protective of that kid. Maybe it's a kid who's on the autism spectrum and the loud is really tough. Maybe it's a kid whose parent, you know, has a certain issue and so you've got to be careful with, but I want you to think of a kid and I want you to go, okay, I am a shepherd in the way I protect and the way I'm proactive with this kid and just talk about it a little bit, okay? Not everyone's going to have the chance to share, but at least two or three of you at your table. Okay, go ahead. Think of a kid in your ministry. All right. Friends, do you understand that those of you who were able to do what I just asked, you either are or are well on your way to being a shepherd? Because you were able to call a kid by name, identify a need that they had, and something that you could do about that need. Good for you. Good for you. I just wrote down, like as a summary, that a shepherd knows their sheep. They know who they are. They know where they are. And they know how they are. They know who they are, where they are, and how they are. It's true that being a shepherd takes a lot more time and intentionality than being a chaperone. But I believe it's worth it because it makes what we do so much more meaningful and so much more impactful. So my challenge to you is that you shift your mind when it comes to yourself. For those of you that lead in the room, my challenge for you is that when you bring people on board, you cast a vision that they are chaperones. No, that they're shepherds. Because they think they're coming probably as a chaperone. That there's a need, there's a function that needs to be fulfilled. And you say, oh, no, we're not looking for chaperones. We're looking for shepherds. And who doesn't want to say yes to that? Right? So Lord, you've modeled for it. John 10 and Ezekiel, you've cast a vision of what shepherds are. And if we could take that and make that a reality in junior high and senior high ministry, Lord, what work could be done? Thank you for the sheep that you have given to us. And Lord, may we look at you and who you are to us, and may we desire to be a shepherd like that to the flock that you've given us. In Jesus' name, amen.